Gíb Galeirth, good morning, Tafalcharoth, good ye an Urgelican shot on Majin Donok, Chin Ekishakt Ni. Welcome to another edition of the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM on this Sunday morning. And we're coming to you from down in the market in Ottawa, and it's a little bit cold out there, crisp and sharp. We have a full programme for you today, and I'm expecting a call in the next few minutes to come in from Ireland, from John Gormley, who is the Minister for the Environment. And John is also the leader of the Green Party. And in Ireland, of course, the concept of coalition government has been something that is accepted and has existed for a long number of years. And we'll get John to talk about how the Green Party can be a member of a coalition government in an environment with some few seats and such different types of policies. Some of the things that are coming up, I did send out my email to my mailing list there, I think it was on Friday, and some of the features coming up later in the month. I have an interesting program coming up about Supers and Jumpers, which is the Protestant mission in Connemara in the 1848 to 1937, and this was the proselytization of Connemara. And also an interesting program that is part of a presidential lecture series that happened at Ars Unathrúin. It's an RTE production, and the program is Ireland of Tomorrow, and that's on the 15th of February. And next we'll talk about Tara Player's production April Bright that's coming up, and also the South Roscommon Singing Circle. So something to look forward to later in the month. And of course on Tuesday, Monday night is music night here on the Gaelic Hour on Chin 97.9 FM. Some of the regular features that are happening in the city on Monday evenings, Cultus Called Horiern, they have Irish dance and language classes, and that's the Blessed Sacrament at 194 Fourth Avenue. And on there's a session on Monday nights also down at the Heart and Crown, and that's a Cultus session. Starts up around 9 p.m. Just go in, sit around, enjoy the music. On Tuesdays from about 11 in the morning to 2, lunchtime, the Irish Society of the Seniors drop in, and that is at St. Margaret Mary's Church over at Sunnyside and Fairburn. And on Wednesday evenings, you can do sit and ceilidh dancing with Cultus, and that is at the Marconi Centre at 1026 Baseline Road. And of course, live music Wednesday to Saturday at any of the Irish Village pubs, and that would include Preston Street, many other places. And I'm very grateful indeed to the ongoing support that I receive from the Irish Village Group of Companies, which enables this programme to stay on the air. And the Ottawa Gaels, they have their indoor football at Algonquin Dome every Friday evening, 9 p.m. And then they do youth training on Sundays from 11 a.m. That's for kids 6 to 15 years of age. So if it is a case of you have anyone out there that is interested in Gaelic football, contact Dermot Ginnane, and Dermot's number is 819-771-6888. We're going to try and set up a call with the minister, but excuse me. In the meantime, here's an interesting little tale from Ronnie Drew.
Staring into the night sky at the tail end of a hurricane is different to seeing the universe through youthful eyes. Perhaps it is a greater appreciation for the cacophony of noise, the cinder-like stars glistening around you, or the blood rush to your head as you lean back and watch the heavens explode with drama and color. There is a magic here that reawakens the senses, delivering a childlike state of uncontrollable glee as you finally re-acknowledge the enormity of life, unburdened by responsibility for the minor role you have played. But at the tail end of this hurricane is a time of plenty, and ours is now the promised land. Wealth is the new religion, and celebrities are the new gods, reflecting a search for perfection that can no longer be found above or within. Technology opens pathways to knowledge that you never take the time to truly explore or understand. While this same technology makes you available 24/7 to everyone except yourself. Talking, negotiating, selling, but seldom making contact, as you hope to discover a secret that offers the potential for true happiness.
And that was Ronnie Drew, an interesting little piece of reflection on the type of life that we all are living. I want to tell you about Mike Heenan. Mike goes under the title of Wordsmith on Call, and Mike has edited over 30 novels and memoirs for local writers after retiring as editor from the former Carp Valley Press 6 years ago and teaching lecturer at the University of Ottawa. He has written some poetry as well, and some of the poetry includes one that we're going to talk about this morning, which is Country Matters and Urban Affairs. Mike, welcome to the Gaelic Hour. Have I lost you? I think we've lost Mike. Let's go into a piece of music, and this is actually a piece by the Chieftains, and it's called The Ottawa Valley Dance. And while that's playing, we'll try and grab Mike on the phone and also try and connect with the minister.
7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Chin Radio is the nation's capital's only multicultural voice. Broadcasting in over 20 different languages. Streaming online at www.chinradio.com. You are listening to Ottawa's definitive multicultural station.
We have Mike on the line. Mike, have I got you? Mike Keenan.
Yes, indeed. Good morning, Austin.
Good morning. I know at this hour of the morning, it's always not that easy. All our ducks in a row. I was telling my listeners there that you have published some poetry, and we're going to talk to you a little about that. Fill us in on what's going on to start with. Give a little bit of background. I explained how you'd been edited over 30 novels for local writers. So give a little background on yourself.
Well, that's the business side, Austin. My true labor of love is really began with a long-abiding interest in the Rideau Canal navvies, and their terrible history filled with tears and laughters, and the little village that they lived in down here, where the Shadow now stands, called Corktown, down the market along and along the canal. And they just dug themselves caves in the banks, you know, of the works. And they worked for the Colonel By,
right,
of course. And it's estimated, it's not certain, but the whole long graveyard, as I refer to it, of the Rideau Canal was marked by this moving village of Irish navvies and their wives and their kiddies, you know. And of course, the swamp people, they were fresh over from Ireland, and they had just left clothes on their back, and they had no idea of a Canadian winter.
Right.
So these poor lads with their families were, some with their families, many were single men looking for to build a life over here, and never got the chance, because it's estimated over 1,000 of the lads died on the route building the waterway from Ottawa to Kingston.
And I know you wrote a piece called The Corktown Bridge,
yes,
commemorating that.
Yes, I did. That's I wrote a couple, and these sprang out of a thing called the Rideau Canal Celtic Cross Committee,
right,
in which some local luminaries were involved, including our beloved Kevin Dooley. And he got it started, actually, and then we finally erected, 3 years later, a beautiful Celtic cross carved in stone, of course, from the down behind the Chateau Laurier, right directly across from the old Bytown Museum. And that was our aim and goal, and we finally got her up, and it serves as a focal point, you know, for remembrance and gratitude. Yeah.
And another one, as I understand, you've one entitled Autumn Pilgrimage.
Yes, my wife and I would travel down the make a little pilgrimage every year down the by canoe down the Rideau Canal, and truly enjoyed ourselves. It was it was a lovely thing. I've got a bit of it here if you'd like to hear it.
I would love to hear that.
Oh, splendid. Here it is.
Okay.
Autumn Pilgrimage. All down the long graveyard of our canal, half-sunken maple leaves swirl and cling to our blades. Wild rice clutches at our gunwales and whispers softly with our passage. At wider river stretches past the locks, red-winged black acolytes shrill their alarms from gray and hopeless roots. Sentinel herons gaze baleful, motionless. Near dusk, the cranberry marsh and a cold harvest moonrise mark our wake with crimson streaks. Later, wrapped in blankets round the holy campfire, we fall into fitful rest. My beloved whimpers in her sleep, and I wonder, was this the final sunset for my lost, unshriven kinsman? A lone loon's requiem echoes across blood-dim marsh. Now, that little piece was built around the original notion that the superstitious navvies had, that the blue mist rising off the Cranberry Marsh down there, about halfway to down to Kingston, was actually a poisonous, deadly poisonous. Well, of course, they had swamp fever, so which was a terrible form of Canadian malaria.
Right.
And that took many of them away, and it was a terrible business. Of course, mosquitoes just breed like mosquitoes in the marsh,
right,
and
right.
And that's what spread the malaria about. But at the same, but they had no notion of that, of course, and they concluded in a partial way that they were right, you know, that you stay out of the marsh and you won't get malaria.
Right. You know? I see, Mike, while that's one of your poems, you have a great love for poetry. You've previously published, is it Bywords?
Yes. Yes, and, indeed. Yeah, I've been at it since I was a wee thing. My dad was Irish, or Heenan from Orsnafarney, County Tipperary, I think.
Okay.
And that's where the Heenans come from, okay. Originally, and then later to Cork.
And Mike, have you ever had the opportunity to get back?
Alas, no, not yet. I was saving that for retirement. And now I'm retired, and I'm working harder than I ever did when I was gainfully employed.
I see that in so many people, that they kind of have to give up work in order to do all the things they need to do in retirement.
That's right. Well, you know yourself. All your fine work.
Hey, I have to get to retirement yet. I'm looking forward to it so I can actually do some of the things I want to do.
Just so. It's insane, isn't it?
We live
our lives in reverse.
I know. Mike, we're going to wrap up, and just before, when the call dropped, we put on a piece of music by the Chieftains, which was the Ottawa Valley Dance.
Yes.
And we'll go back to that.
Oh, that's lovely.
And of course, one of the things I remember when I was watching down the old Plank Road with the Chieftains, and they brought on the Pulaski Brothers to do the Ottawa Valley Dance.
Oh, yes.
So, thanks a million for rousing yourself at this unearthly hour and coming on the Gaelic Hour.
Oh, well, God bless you. No, I'm a faithful listener, so and I look forward to it.
Excellent.
All right, God bless.
Thanks, Mike. And this is the Chieftains, and we're going back to the Ottawa Valley Dance. You're listening to the Gaelic Hour on Chin 97.9 FM.
This is Michael English, and you're listening to the Gaelic Hour on Chin 97.9 FM.
Nostalgia by David Berkeley. I used to think that nostalgia was for solace and entertainment in old age, but not anymore. Recently, I decided to revisit the old Victorian shipwreck of my boyhood, stuck in the mud a few hundred yards offshore at the bottom of our road. Now, only its ribs are left. My wife said she was not going to be left out of this adventure. Having scanned the paper for tides, the sky for rain and our wellies for leaks, we drove to the spot and parked the car close to the shore. The wreck beckoned us, looking almost as of old. After testing the seabed for firmness, we took a bearing on the hulk and set off. As we picked our way among the stones, the nostalgia began to wash over me. Crabs scuttled for shelter in the seaweed and reminded me of how I had tormented them when I was 8 years old. I recalled reefing my hand on a broken bottle at the bottom when swimming underwater, and seeing my blood on the surface when I came up, just like in Jaws. In my growing excitement, I failed to notice how soft the mud was getting. Comments like, "Are you sure this is a good idea?" from my wife, met with disdain. Our legs were showing a tendency to vacate our wellies, and heavy dollops of mud were sticking to the boots. We were only 30 yards from the wreck. It seemed a shame, a defeat, not to carry on. The tide was still well out. I looked back at the shore, and all seemed well. People were going about their business as if they expected us to do the same. "Maybe the ground is firmer ahead," I said weakly, as I leaned on my wife's shoulder to extract my left boot from the mud. "Oh, yeah," she replied, and I pulled out the right boot, causing the left one to sink even further. I was sure Scott of the Antarctic would not have given up so close to the pole. I looked to the shore again, hoping to see worried people waving to us. But no, they were still scurrying about, unconcerned. Suddenly, I had a vision of the newspaper headlines. "Elderly couple in suicide pact." I panicked. "Maybe we should head back," my wife said. As I had no better idea, and she was so calm, I decided to use her shoulder again. After all, if she hadn't come, she might have lost me. So, step by sucking step, we made our way back. This time I ignored the scuttling crabs and the ancient itch in my reefed hand. Somehow all the romance was gone. I almost kissed the car. As we drove home, I wondered if we might try it again someday, with snowshoes. But I suppose that would be cheating.
You are listening to the Gaelic Hour here on 297.9 FM. And while we're waiting, and I'm communicating back and forward to Ireland at the moment to try and sort out the call I should have with Minister Gormley, we're going to move along and talk with Pierre Schreier. And Pierre has just launched a CD called Melange, and will be here tonight at the Unitarian Church. And Irish Music Ottawa is bringing Pierre in and looking after that one. And I'll just give you the details on that. That is at 7 p.m. At the First Unitarian Church on 30 Clary Avenue. And Pierre is appearing with Andy Hillhorse. I should have Pierre on the line. Pierre, are you on the line there?
Yes, I am. Hi, good morning, all.
Welcome to the Gaelic Hour.
Thank you.
And, of course, Pierre, I'm sure, and I don't need to introduce you, I'm sure my listeners are very well aware that you are a Canadian fiddle champion, and you've been performing for a number of years. Do you want to give a little background on yourself?
Well, some folks here know that I'm a triplet. I was born a triplet, and into a family of fiddle music. My brother, older brother Raymond, started when he was 9, and we got to hear the music when we were about 3 years old. So the triplets running around and dancing to this music, we were just smitten by the great music that he was producing. And my sister Julie, a wonderful piano player, was backing him up at that time. So basically we were set up already to become fiddle players. And when we were 8 years old, we picked up the fiddle, and my parents took us to lessons, to classical lessons, and we kept fiddling going in at the house. And it was wonderful because Raymond was, my older brother, was always interested in different kinds of fiddle styles. And when he came back from going to university, when we were older, he brought back a lot of recordings. We were really, we had it good because we had him teaching us the various styles of fiddling from American to Irish to Scottish to French-Canadian. It was wonderful. So, and then, of course, learning from each other, too, the triplets, Louis and Daniel and myself, we'd compete at all the competitions in Ontario and basically do about 10 of them during the summertime. my parents would pack up the van, and we'd go drive eight hours from our hometown, Sault Ste. Marie. And basically that was great for us because we'd learn from each other. It was a little competitive, but not really, it wasn't really that serious between us. We really enjoyed doing that, and we had a lot of fun. And basically these Ontario fiddle competitions, you might have heard of Pembroke, Ontario. They have one great one there. And of course they have one called the Grandmasters here in Ontario, in Ottawa.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really did well by competing and learning, and we became, you know, champions because of that that little competition we had and learning from each other, you know.
I don't know if you can hear over the phone, but we have a piece of music playing in the background from the CD.
Oh yeah.
And that is from CD Melange. You formed the band then in what was it, 1995?
Yeah, basically I retired from competition. I announced it. Basically, it was in Pembroke. And I went full force into the professional touring, becoming a touring musician.
Right.
And I recorded my first album that year, too, live in Sault Ste. Marie. I did a tour in Sault Ste. Marie, Sudbury, and Timmins.
Right.
And because I'm come from the north.
Yeah.
I wanted to produce something that came from the north, and so I hired my sister Julie on piano, Nathan Curry from this area, and Brian Pagel, a full guitar player from Paris.
So Pierre, given that life on the road can be pretty rough, and a professional musician, it's a very small percentage actually make it up to the top, to the point that you can have a really comfortable lifestyle. You've been on the road now 13 years going on 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
You're obviously a tremendous success if you're still out there after that period in time.
Yeah, it is a hard business. Music business is not the easiest. But I feel lucky because this kind of music, you can gather some folks and even in the house and create a house concert and still have people enjoying your music. So you can go from that and then do some churches like we're doing, like tonight, we're doing a church tonight, and also doing big halls like Roy Thompson Hall in Toronto, and it's amazing. I mean, I feel fortunate. I feel like if I play a small crowd or a big crowd these days, it's all the same, and I really do enjoy the smaller crowds. It's quite intimate. We're doing a few orchestra shows this year. They're called Pops Concerts.
Right.
And I have arrangements all done up and everything. So we're doing Thunder Bay this year, Windsor, and Kitchener-Waterloo. So hopefully sometime we'll come to Ottawa and do an orchestra too.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, of course, as we said, well, since 1995, how many CDs have you managed to put out on the market out there?
Six.
Good for you.
And I recorded them all with my good friend James Stevens.
Right. And James, of course, is just across the river from us here.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I have to say, I did see you perform last year out in Almont.
Well, that's right.
With Gara O'Halloran.
Oh.
And that was a tremendous performance.
A wonderful player. Wonderful guy, too. Yeah, the concertina player.
So you had a house concert last night. That was out there in Perth.
Exactly. Yeah, we had one at in Lanark here.
Yeah.
And that was great. We had a good time here.
Right.
Yeah, full house.
And of course, for a house concert, as distinct from what you're going to do tonight in Clary Avenue at the First Unitarian Church, do you go acoustic, say, if you're into a more small, and it must be, as you said yourself, a lot more intimate?
Yes, it's an acoustic gig. We basically just come in and they set up a little spot in the living room.
Right.
And basically, the folks are just about, they're about 4 feet away from you, or 3 feet.
That's
at the front row.
Right.
And it's great. It's got a different energy. Basically, it is very intimate. You get a rapport with the audience, really. It's really there and ready. And of course, when you get a bigger hall, you need a PA system. You need to project your music out further.
And of course, it's much harder. It must be much harder to connect with the audience in that sense.
Because
the lights are on you. You can't even see that. You can't see the faces necessarily.
Yes, and I would say the bigger the hall, the harder it gets to connect with the folks. Yes, and especially when it gets dark and there's hardly any lights on the folks out there. I love seeing people's faces and smiles or just reaction of a tune, you know.
Right. So this CD, Melange, what was the inspiration behind that?
Well, for the first time, I basically put, it's all original, all Canadian original material. And it's the first of the six that I get help from Canada Council and the Ontario Arts Council. So I was able to really do what I wanted to do with it without the stress of finances. Of course, I have a young family at home, two kids, and when that happened, I really was able to just relax about it all. And I wrote a lot of tunes for the album. About 60% are mine.
Okay.
And the rest are from good friends from Ontario or from all over Canada. Oliver Schroer has a tune on it. A great fiddle player that passed away this summer, unfortunately, a good friend. And James Stevens wrote a tune, and we have some from Shannon Johnson from the McDades.
Right.
He won the Juno last year.
Yes.
And Brad Fremlin and Duncan Cameron, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
I have to say, as we're talking, and as I don't know if you can hear the tracks we're playing, but it's beautiful. There's a nice flow in the music in the background, and anyone that's listening, it is Pierre, and Pierre will be out at the First Unitarian Church tonight on Clary Avenue, and that starts at 7 o'clock, and there will be tickets at the door. I can't off the top of my head recall what the door price is. Do you know, Pierre, can you fill me in on that one?
I'm not too sure, but I think it's reasonable.
Yeah, I'm sure it is, but just what you're hearing in the background is an example of Pierre's wonderful creative power and playing power. The other members, excuse me, the other members of the family, that when you started out as the triplets, you say you got your sister involved. I presume, you grew up in a house full of music, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Was there anyone didn't play music?
Well, there were six of us. My oldest brother, Patrick, he did play a bit of guitar, but he left home quite early. When we were eight and really getting into it, 8 years old, he was 18 and he was already gone. So he really didn't get into this whole phenomenon of fiddling.
Right.
But the rest of us did get involved. My dad was also there to help us out at the beginning. He played guitar and he sang. Yeah, it was wonderful because he would sing some French songs for us. And he got into country songs too. And my mom was amazing too. She was just really not into the music but the support. And she was really ready to get us ready to go to a gig or to a lesson. Or she would always have food for us ready to eat after a big rehearsal or something like that. You know, it's great.
And before we wrap up, the one thing I do want to cover as well is I noticed you have done some touring in Europe and the US, including Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you perform and how did you find it?
In Ireland,
yeah.
Oh, I played in Bunkrana and I played in Dublin. I played in County Clare. And I played in wonderful places like that, even up in Donegal. I enjoyed every bit of it. We were really well received, and we made a lot of great friends. Dermot Byrne is one of them that I really got connected with, and I recorded an album with Dermot. He's from the group Altan.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And it was great. There was a great rapport. I mean, I was able to play the tunes with them and learn in the sessions. But they're very open, you're Irish too. You're very hospitable and very open to anything, and it seems like it's very welcoming for us.
Yeah, well, I know if you were to walk into a session and you had the fiddle case under your arm when you there's encouragement to get it out and
yes.
get involved.
Get involved, exactly. And I, the first trip I went there was in 1993 at a Flacciola, an All-Ireland competition.
Right.
I won the one in North America here, and then I was over. And it was in Clonmel in County Tipperary. And basically, I enjoyed it. I wasn't really serious about the competition at that point. It was my first trip.
Right.
It was quite magical. I really took in a lot of the great magic that was happening in the pubs. And one of the pubs that I remember is Lonergan's Pub. They basically took me in as a son there, and I ended up staying there for four nights in a row and had a great time. Long sessions and lots of good Guinness, too.
Well, Pierre, I'm going to let you go, and maybe you can sit down and enjoy a good Irish breakfast out there with Claire Dwyer.
Yes.
And I'm looking forward to seeing you here tonight, and that's out at the Unitarian Church, and Craig Ham is the guy that's putting that one on.
Yes.
And 7 p.m.
Right.
And the CD is called Mélange. And am I pronouncing it the way you'd like it pronounced?
Mélange is good.
Okay.
It means a mixture, eh? I mean, a medley of different things.
And that is what we've been listening to in the background. And we're going to continue on with another piece of music on that. And you are listening to the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM. And this is another track from Pierre Schreier. And the guitar on that was with Andy Hillhorst, who's also with Pierre tonight. I do want to mention a few things before the call comes in, and I'm still waiting for the minister to come in from Ireland. I'm communicating back and forward, and I'm told the call will be coming in. And there's some renovations going down at the National Irish Canadian Culture Centre in St. Patrick's Street, the former St. Bridget's Church. So some of the events that were, and I had sent out my email, are cancelled. And that includes the pancake breakfast, which would have been on Sunday next, the 8th. And the Irish Language Day on the 7th is also cancelled. But on coming up on the 12th. Tara Players get underway with April Bright at the Arts Court, so mark that to your calendar. And also on Saturday the 14th, the British Isles Family History Society of Greater Ottawa, they have their normal free lecture series, so you can catch that also. And we'll go back and listen to a little bit more of Pierre Schreyer. Minister John Gormley was born in Dublin in 1959 and educated in St. Munchen's College in Limerick, UCD, and Freiburg University in Germany. And he contested his first general election in 1989 and in 1991 was elected to Dublin City Council and was Lord Mayor from 1994 to 95. In June 1997, he was elected to the Dáil, and in June 2007, was appointed as Minister for the Environment, Heritage and Local Government. And he's a member, he's the author of The Green Guide for Canada on the Wolfhound Press. Minister Gormley, welcome to the Gaelic Hour in Ottawa.
Thanks very much.
And you told me as we just before we come on, you're walking outside at the moment.
I am. It's a Sunday afternoon here, and it's actually very, very cold. Probably not as cold as it is in Canada.
But you got that.
We have these winds sweeping down now from Scandinavia, making it very cold here, and I'm out walking and just in my constituency, which is in Ringsend. Ringsend is a part of Dublin very close to the, you know, very close to the sea, and traditionally has been a seafaring village. But I think a lot of the those activities have gone by the wayside. So we're it's still a unique part of Dublin, I have to say.
Tell my listeners, Minister, get an understanding of the Irish Green Party. Can you give us a very brief summary of when it was established and how many elections you've contested, how many local councillors and TDs you guys have?
Yeah, I mean, we're, I suppose, like a lot of Green parties, we're a relatively small party. And we've had the good fortune, unlike the Canadian Greens and other smaller Green parties in North America, that we have a good system in place here, proportional representation, which means that small parties can get elected, not just the councils, but the national parliaments as well. We currently have six in the Dáil. We have two senators because we have a bicameral system in this country. And we also have about 30 councillors. It means that we have a certain amount of leverage, and because the biggest party in the country, Fianna Fáil, were trying to form a government, they needed the support of the Green Party, and it meant that we were able to, with just six members of Parliament, we were able to get two ministers in government. So we got two major portfolios, Environment, Heritage and Local Government, which is one ministry, and we also got Energy and Communications. And that's basically this. We also have a minister for food, and that is my colleague Trevor Sargent has taken up that portfolio, and that's an extremely important portfolio as well.
So, Minister, in an Irish political context, coalition governments have been a reality for many years. Do you consider that a coalition government is effective where divergent political ideologies are around the cabinet table?
Well, of course, it is an interesting political situation because, yes, the Green Party would have a different view on many, many issues. And, I think it's also a reality, however, that in modern politics, there has been a convergence towards the centre. Now, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, we can argue about it. I think what you'll find, because of the economic crisis, is that a lot of previously right-wing parties are going to have to consider ideas which were traditionally on the left. I think we're going to come into our own in many ways, because certainly the sort of traditional right-wing thinking is no longer relevant, I think, given the current crisis. And that would apply, I think, in the United States and in Canada as well.
Well, mentioning the current crisis, in the light of a current crisis, does a government of a country the size of Ireland have any real ability to influence the economy, where much of what is happening is driven by international banking and big business?
Well, you're right, of course. I mean, this is a global crisis, and certainly in the context of a small country like Ireland with a small open economy, we're very, very vulnerable to what takes place in larger economies. It's often been said that when America sneezes, we get a cold, and it's probably even worse than that. We are now probably experiencing a very bad economic flu, but we can do things in this country to stimulate economic activity. It means looking at the reality of the situation. It means that, for example, we can no longer rely on the housing market, which was overheating, and this is a problem in other European economies as well. It means that we do have to make cutbacks, and this is where a party in government can play a huge role, because where you make those cutbacks and how you stimulate the economy is of major importance. And certainly, as far as we're concerned, stimulating the economy in terms of housing installation, things like Obama is talking about, that those are very, very important. Stimulating it in terms of environmental infrastructure, those are very important considerations.
But in many cases, green solutions have proven to be more costly. So how realistically do you suggest that green jobs can be viable? Like, the reality is that people tend to vote with their buying habits and tend to purchase the lowest cost item, yeah, which oftentimes is not environmentally friendly.
Yeah, I would take issue with the assertion that it is more costly. In the case here in Ireland, where I've had to make investments in capital investment, we'll say. I was just out walking there, and I got interrupted by someone briefly.
No problem.
In the case of capital investment, for example, in water infrastructure, we've increased that by 19% against the backdrops, a backdrop of severe cuts. Now, that actually stimulates employment. And as well as that, it protects the environment and ensures that we can comply with our EU obligations. All of those factors are extremely important. But the thing that is uppermost in people's minds at the moment is the creation of employment. And the sort of stimulus package that we are currently looking at will mean that more and more people will be employed in what we call the green technology sector, in the green economy, producing many thousands of jobs.
Right, and well, to that point, Dell moved from Limerick there in the last number of weeks, bringing 1,900 jobs over to Poland, citing a €7 an hour difference in labour costs. Is the Irish workforce at this stage, has it not nearly priced itself out of the market in the ability to attract foreign investment?
Well, that is, of course, a major issue within the European Union. We have many new member states coming on board who are able to offer much lower labour costs, and thus some of the traditional industry that came to Ireland is going to move elsewhere. Now, we have to adjust to that new reality, and that's exactly what we're doing. I don't think, frankly, we can compete at the lower end of the market. Where we can compete is in the area of innovation. Ireland has a very well-educated workforce. We have people here who, particularly in the IT sector, have new ideas. And I think in the whole area of R&D, research and development, we are way ahead of the curve. And that's where the new emphasis has to be, because what we want to do now is to build a smart economy, an economy based on innovation. And that, I think, is the future for Ireland. You know, we launched a document before Christmas there, a framework document on rebuilding our economy. And the emphasis is certainly on the innovation sector and on the green tech sector. Both of those combined will mean that, of course, we won't be able to compete with those low-cost economies, but we can compete at the high end.
Minister, I'm down to 1 minute before we go off air. So I've, in the past few weeks, I've just come back from Ireland, and I noticed that there were some Green councillors have resigned as they charge that the parliamentary party has sold out its soul to prop up Fianna Fáil. With the upcoming local elections, do you have concerns about this?
Well, you may not know, in fact, that today there has been an opinion poll. It's a tracking of poll which is published by one of the major newspapers here, the Sunday Business Post. And in fact, what it shows is that the Green Party has almost doubled its support in the last few weeks. Now, I think that says a lot. What it's saying is that people want the Green Party to be in government. They like the changes that the Green Party are making. I think those councillors that left misjudged completely the public mood. I think, you know, when they're getting grief, as will always happen when you're in government, they need to understand that the initial reaction of people before Christmas was one of anger, certainly at the sort of cutbacks that had to be made. But that changes very quickly, and people begin to grasp the reality that they want people to be in government, and they want those people in, you know, to govern, and what they want is stability and leadership. That's what we're offering. And the analysis of those who conducted the polls was that that's what the leadership of the Green Party is actually providing. I'm very confident that will result in electoral gains in the local elections.
Minister, I have to cut you there. We're literally right up to the news over here. And I want to thank you very much indeed for coming on the Gaelic Hour and sharing some of your thoughts with us. And I wish you every success in the future.
Thank you very much.
I close my eyes and picture the emerald of the sea from the fishing boats that tingle.
In Canada's capital, this is CJLL, Ottawa Gatineau's multicultural radio voice, broadcasting in over 20 different languages, serving 40 ethno-cultural communities. This is Chin Radio, 97.9.